All right. Greetings, everyone. This is Dr. Will Tuttle here, and it's wonderful to see you all joining us. The date is Thursday, February 15th, 2023, and this is our third Thursday Zoom World Peace Diet Circle call. We have all kinds of technical challenges here, but we are happy and doing great. We're in Key West, and so things didn't go exactly according to plan regarding the how we're going to do this Zoom call, but luckily it's working, I think. So if you want to send me a message in the chat, feel free to do that. Thank you, Lisa Wong, for helping out not only with the talk we just gave here in Key West, but also with the Zoom call we're doing now. Lisa's the co-host, and she can let people in. Or if there's anything wrong with the technical, just let us know. We're doing this in our van with us, just totally by a battery, and by a cell phone connected to the laptop. So this is the most funky arrangement we have ever done, but it's so far so good. And like I say, it's the main thing is the spirit. So great to see you all with us. And I'd like to, maybe we'll just have a short meditation, a brief meditation here at the beginning, and then we'll go ahead and open it up to the Q&A. If you have comments or questions about anything in the vegan world, there's a lot happening in the last month since we were together, and I think it's great to have the possibilities. So, this has really been quite an adventure here. We left Hippocrates on Monday, and we're now in Key West. We just did a lecture here in someone's home, and last night a workshop in the Unity Church here in Key West. So, all in all, it's going great. And we're grateful for the opportunity. So let's get started with a short meditation, like I said, briefly, and collect our thoughts and feelings. So as we continue to welcome people onto our call, it's just beginning. Let's take a moment and connect with our breathing and feeling our connection with this beautiful earth. The rivers and the oceans, the islands, and the jungles and the polar ice caps and the fields and forests and the beautiful infinite variety of birds and animals and fishes and insects and the tremendous celebration of life here. We give deep thanks for another beautiful day here on this earth with the opportunity to do in some small way a contribution, to create a contribution to the liberation of animals and the liberation of humans, the liberation of all living beings, the liberation of our own minds and hearts from the programming of our society, to heal the wounds of the indoctrination that pervades everything, and to shine a light through the veils of deception that seem to be casting their shadows everywhere nowadays. We give thanks for each other and for everyone who's working together to help shine the light of truth and kindness and compassion and caring, freedom and abundance into our world, onto this earth, from whatever dimension they are doing that. And we take a moment now to just feel our physical body as a radiant, divine manifestation of love and creativity, our vehicle for speaking and acting and creating, moving, celebrating on this earth. We give thanks knowing that every dimension of this physical body is in alignment with our purpose, is under the guidance of the highest intelligence, the creative power that gives rise moment after moment to this universe. And we give thanks for the harmonious functioning of every dimension of not only our physical body, but all of our affairs. And as we know that at a deep level, we have a purpose for this incarnation, a reason that we are here, and that every day we unfold this reason of being. And we let it unfold more and more every day like a flower that is always blossoming and blooming in new and vibrant ways. And that we are sending into the infinite web of relations a yearning for freedom and compassion and understanding that there is one life living through all of us. One life living through every expression of life that we see here. He sends special thoughts of kindness and caring and compassion to all the animal friends on this earth who are being exploited by humans, who are lost in the indoctrinated delusion of seeing beings as objects that we can buy and sell by the pound or use for our purposes. We liberate in our own minds these animals and the humans. We see everyone rising up to a higher level of vibration, where we understand the infinite interconnectedness of all life, and that we are here with a purpose to create and celebrate and enjoy and interconnect with these beings that we refer to as animals and with each other. We live in a beautiful, abundant paradise that has everything we need to thrive and celebrate our lives here. So we give thanks knowing that we are part of the human awakening on this earth at this time, that we are part of the generation of the new species, Homo Ahimsa, that Judy Carman writes about, and the world peace, freedom, way of eating and living. We connect with the ancient meaning of the word diet in the Greek, which means way of living. So we know that as we eat, that we have a diet, but it's more than just a diet. It's a way of living based on mindfulness and conscious awareness of the reverberations of our actions into the world, doing the best we can that all of our thoughts, words, and deeds go out into the infinite web of relations to bring healing and joy and freedom and peace to all of our brothers and sisters who are humans and all of our brothers and sisters who are animal people as well, to all living beings. So we close our meditation by seeing this beautiful planet now bathed in the light of freedom, peace, and harmony, knowing that whatever illusory forces are attempting to cause fear and suffering and deception are evaporating back into their native nothingness, because there's only one fundamental power that gives rise to all manifestations of life. This power is love, not just an emotion of love, but the power, the force of creativity that loves all manifestations of itself and celebrates every manifestation. We give thanks for this precious incarnation that we have and for this opportunity that we have right now to be together, knowing that all the ripples that radiate into the web of relations from our being together here will be to bring greater freedom and awareness for all living beings. We give thanks knowing this is so, and so it is. Great. Okay, so bless you all, and we are ready to go ahead and dive in here. We very well may, I think today, we'll see how it goes, may not go the entire time. I'm not sure how long everything's going to last here, our connection and the battery and all these different things. So we'll make the best of it while it lasts. And Madeline and I are living in this little van. You can kind of see it here, maybe. This is it. I mean, here we are. We literally live for 4.5 months in a 7-foot by 4-foot space. We're like two chickens in a factory farm, really. But we're happy. Here, this is can you see it? I'm there. There's Madeline. I don't know if you can see Madeline. Oh, there she is. Anyway, this is home. Yeah, you know, one of the things that we, metaphors that we kind of like of the two of us is that we are two peas in a pod. And, so one of the things I think is so, kind of fun to think about is this, this idea of being two peas in a pod, because, you know, when you see peas in a pod, you know, they just fit in there just right, you know, and that's kind of how we feel. We just kind of barely fit in here. Especially at night when we're stretched out, it's just like just enough inches to, so we can be comfortable. And but when you think about it, you know, peas are beautiful manifestations, and the more peas we eat, the healthier we are. And on this particular tour, we're on a whirlwind tour. We're whirling around across the country from the west coast to the east coast, and now around Florida and back to the west coast again. So we are whirled peas. So we're really promoting the whirled peas diet. That's the joke for today. The whirled peas diet is the whirled peas diet. And Mel and I feel like two whirled peas here, just whirling around, two peas in a tiny pod, and doing the best we can when we jump out of the pod to smile at everybody and recommend that they go vegan, and then go on whirling our peas as we go around the world. So we have about we figured out we have a four-legged tour, and the first leg was going all the way from California to Florida. We did about 17 lectures on that tour. And then the next leg of the tour was all around, basically in southeast Florida at Hippocrates and some places around there. And that was another about 20 lectures and then presentations. And now we're just starting the third leg, and we're at the very end at as far as we can go going to the east, which is here in the very tip of Florida. Now we're going to start, tomorrow we're going to start heading back to California. And so this third leg of the tour, where we go finish up Florida, there's another 20 events, and then finally when we go from South Carolina all the way back to California, we're doing another about 20 events. So we're doing about 80 events, and it's really been wonderful to just meet so many people who are willing and able to help share the vegan message all over the southern United States, and doing it in creative ways, all kinds of ways. And we're part of a movement. I think, you know, in many ways, our movement has become somewhat fractured, and it's a little bit of a difficult time because COVID just threw a wrench in the gears in a lot of ways for VegFest and people getting together and doing things. And it also allowed a lot of divisiveness into our movement, where people started arguing with each other over pharmaceutical protocols. And so we're still recovering from that. It's deliberate. It's a deliberate divide and conquer strategy. So hopefully we can stay somewhat aware of all this and forge a movement that's more powerful than ever. What I'm seeing really is bringing together the movement for freedom for humans and the movement for freedom for animals, and seeing that that's really two sides of the same coin, and we can't have freedom for us if we don't have freedom for animals and real freedom. And of course that means spiritual freedom, because we have to be able to connect with our true nature and not identify merely with the programming that we've been all indoctrinated with since we've been born. And that's something that most people haven't done, including most vegans, actually. So I always say veganism is this two-step process. The first step is great. Going vegan, that's great. But if we don't do the second step of going more deeply into what it's all about and understanding the spiritual dimension and the cultural and all the whole psychological dimensions of this, then we're very easily fooled by the forces of deception, and end up, I think, in many ways harming the overall movement. So thank you all for all of your efforts on the inner levels, because I know that it's a especially challenging time right now, and we're kind of in between. I think we're kind of in between the battles and the larger war. So there's more things, I think, on the way here. This is probably really since the year 2000, the year 2020 started, there's been, I think, really the largest and most expensive and most comprehensive psychological operation and war, really, against humanity that's ever happened in the history of the world. And it's left a lot of us as kind of dazzled and dazed and what's going on here. So it's important to stay savvy and stay centered and think positive thoughts and connect every day with your inner meditative equilibrium and awareness, so that we can ferret out the truth and separate falsehood from truth. There's an old metaphor from India that we should be like a swan. The swan is an animal that, according to legends, is able to put her beak right into a bowl of milk, and when she sucks in the milk, she leaves all the milk part out and only gets pure water. She just sucks water out of milk. I mean, wouldn't that be great to be able to do that? Not get the milk, just get the water? Well, swans can do that, but that's a metaphor for our ability to drink of the world but not be polluted by the world. We can look and see and not fall for all the ruses and deceptions and psyops and hoaxes that are literally everywhere right now. All right, so good. So now I'd like to, let's see, somebody says, do you have any videos or articles wherein you discuss breatharianism? Yeah, that's a good question to start with. I would like to mention that. You know, that's something that's always in the background, I think, in many ways, of people's awareness, especially when people start eating a vegan diet, and then they start thinking they want to clean out even more, and they go raw vegan, and they want to clean out even more, and they start fasting, and then they think, wow, man, I'm fasting, can I just never eat again? Wouldn't that be great to never have to eat again? And I've gone through that. I, at one point in my life, many moons ago, back in the 1980s, I was a serious breatharian in training. There was a guy, what was his name? Willie. It was a breatharian who recommended, he wrote a whole book on it. He recommended the yellow diet, which is eating only foods that are yellow. So I was doing that, and then the idea is to graduate from that to the point where you start fasting, and as you're fasting on water, you get more and more energy, and then if you can click in, you can transition over. You can actually make the transition, and now your energy is coming straight from your breath, from the prana in the air, and from the sun. And most breatharians do drink, but they don't eat any food, drink water. But there are people, well-documented cases of people who never eat, and that's been well-documented. So there are people who never eat, who go for years and years and years just never eating, and sometimes they gain weight. I mean, they get kind of fat, which is really funny when you think about it. Like the Saint Teresa Newman in Germany, she was pretty plump, you know, after never eating for 40 years. So the idea, you know, how is that possible? And the idea, of course, is that if one human being can do that, then I mean anyone can do it, right? I mean, that would make sense. And if it's feasible, and there's documented cases of people in India who have gone without eating for many months, probably years, and I never met him, but I have a friend who was friends with Jericho Sunfire, who's done quite a few videos, and he's a breatharian who really talked from England. He really talked through the whole thing and how he did it, and you know, talked about it quite a bit. There's a woman in Australia, of course, who gives workshops on becoming a breatharian, and quite a few people are following her. And this guy Jericho Sunfire was an amazing athlete. I mean, he wasn't just a guy surviving. He had muscles that were massive. And I remember watching videos of him, you know, like an overhead horizontal ladder. He would jump up on that thing and then just jump with both hands just from rung to rung. You know, how much strength that takes to just jump with both hands simultaneously from rung to rung. And then walking around on his hands and do backflips and all these things as a breatharian, right? So anyway, what I would want to say about it is don't try it. I mean, I think it's tempting maybe, but really, I've also met people that have really messed themselves up trying to be breatharians because, you know, really what happens if you start fasting, I've gotten to the point a few times, and many people do, where you start to feel more and more energy, and you're not eating, and you get more energized, and it can happen. You're just drinking water, and you're starting to really feel great, and the body seems to have another energy supply. And you think, okay, maybe we can just keep this going. And the idea of eating seems so vulgar. Like, oh, I can't even imagine eating something. But the problem is that the body, the way we're living now, we're burning calories for energy. And we're using that. And that's the system we're on. And so in order to transition over to prana, your body has to make a leap. And you know, you can easily have brain damage. You can die if you just refuse to eat and your brain doesn't get the nutrients it needs. You can really harm yourself terribly. So I think I would never recommend it because I think that we have, you know, good, healthy vegan food is a beautiful relationship we can develop with nature, with plants, with vegetables and fruits and so forth. It would be you know, a great survival skill. That's what I was thinking back when I was doing it. You know, not have to eat. You know, that'd be great. But the underlying idea really is, I think that if you're going to try it, just be careful because you do have to make that switch over. And some people do it relatively easily, but some people don't. And then it's not good. So I know there's a cafe, though. I heard about a cafe up in the Himalayas. It's a breatharian cafe. The food's not very good, but the atmosphere is fantastic. If you want to go there, you can try at the breatharian cafe. So hopefully that's helpful. Is that helpful to you, Kathy? I guess you have a lot of... I don't have time to talk and read all this stuff. But yeah, so Davi is saying, I'm fasting now and having some issues with trying to get back into taking anything, including water. Wow. Well, I mean, that's called a dry fast or what? I mean, with no drinking at all. That's really extreme. I've never done that more than at the most 24 hours because not drinking. Water really is important when you're fasting to clean out toxins. So be careful there, please. And thanks for joining us all the way from England in the middle of the night. But I've also been going through some seriously hellish anxiety over the past several weeks and went into this fast because I didn't want to fuel that negative energy cycle. Yeah, well, that's actually a great idea too because when we do a fast, we can really, that's a powerful spiritual practice that can really help us to break old patterns, for sure. Kathy says, Alec interviewed Jasmine Bean, yeah, yesterday on YouTube, and it was very inviting. Alec Zek. Okay, so, wow, you've done up to 5 days of dry fasting, Johnny? I didn't know that was possible. I mean, good for you, I guess. Wow. I remember doing, we did this Tibetan meditation retreat where we did dry fasting every other day for 21 days. And those days when we weren't eating or drinking, we were just, of course, we were meditating and chanting the whole day. It was a lot of energy, but it was really very hard to do. So good for you. Yeah, we humans can get into all kinds of food trips, can't we? I think it's true. But I think in the long run, for us, at least at the stage we're at, if we could just get people to go vegan, that would be, you know, really a tremendous progress. And then after that, we can go on to the next stage. But I think right now we need to really focus on that. Anyone else have any thoughts? We got lots of comments coming up here. I think, let's see. Thanks, Julie. It's great to see you also. Yeah, this is in our native habitat here, in our van. There's a book called The Phoenix Protocol, which outlines how to deal with 7-day dry fast based upon the research by some Russian doctors who dealt with even longer dry fasts. Okay, well, that's a whole new technology. The Russians usually are way ahead of us on everything, so that very well could be possible that they're doing that. One thing I wanted to mention, and before I forget, there was a couple of, well, maybe I'll mention something else first. Somebody asked me to talk about this during the third Thursday call that we have, and that was the idea of God. She really wanted me to talk about God because she thinks it's an important thing to talk about, to understand what, is there a God, and if there's a God, why did God create this system of so much suffering in animals eating other animals and humans doing what we're doing? And, you know, it's one of those basic dilemmas that I think all of us probably struggle with. Like, if there's a God who's benevolent and loving and creative, how did he, she, or this infinite divine power end up putting so much horror and misery and insanity into the creation? So, I will say, I don't usually use the word God in my writing or in my speaking myself, because I don't think in those terms myself. And I feel that the word itself has so much baggage for many people, in the sense that some people use it as a way of expressing something judgmental or male or a savior for us of some kind, where we don't have to do anything but believe, or various things. And if I use the word love or other words, just like my old Zen teacher used to say, if you say these words and there's 10 people in the room, there's 10 different interpretations. Everybody has their own interpretation, especially of loaded words. And God is probably the most loaded of all words, even though I love the word, really. I mean, the idea, it comes from the old English word that we get our word good. You know, good and God come from the same root. So the underlying idea is that there's this fundamental, essentially good core of being. But the thing that I think is interesting, too, is that there are many religions in the world that are non-theistic, you know, many with millions, billions of followers don't have any concept of God at all, and they are religions. And so in the West, the three main religions in the West, which are Christianity, Judaism, and Islam, are all theistic religions. There's a God in all three of them, and the God is what is typically is worshipped and has the power and so forth. These three religions also are the three probably most carnivorous religions, in the sense of really sort of validating eating animals as a part of the way it is done. And not that that's part of the religion, but I think it's maybe just a way that people rationalize it in those religions. Most of the religions from Asia do not have a monotheistic God, right? I mean, there definitely is not one in Buddhism or Taoism or Confucianism or Jainism or in most of the Hinduism. There was never such a thing as a Hinduism until the British went to India, and they said, what kind of religion do they have in India? India had a whole variety of many different religious traditions, and the British just made up the word Hinduism. It's kind of like, you know, these animals over here, they have this religion, you know, kind of ridiculous. But anyway, you know, there's Vedanta, there's many threads within what is referred to as Hinduism that are completely non-theistic. Also, yoga, for example. But there are some strands of what is called Hinduism that are theistic, where there's a devotional aspect to a deity. And there's also many polytheistic traditions, of course. Most indigenous traditions are polytheistic, so they have many divine beings of various kinds. So this idea, is there a God, is kind of a specific cultural artifact where people look at it in those terms. I was always personally, for some reason, drawn to the Asian religions from the time I was pretty young. And it made more sense to me because it was focused really on what I can do to make my life and others' lives better. How can I awaken? It's based more on awakening, the idea of waking up out of a delusion or out of a dream that is false. And so to me, that was always more interesting. And the Buddha himself, when asked if there is a God or a God, he never denied it, but he also never affirmed it, and he maintained what is referred to as the noble silence, which basically he said, you know, basically was, you can spend a lot of time and energy arguing and pontificating and thinking about that, and that's time that would be better spent in meditation or making an effort to wake up and discover the source of what you are. And so for me, that makes a lot of sense. I think people have a very strong belief in God that's helpful to them. Great. I'm totally love if whatever people, you know, works for people. The problem, of course, can be that people could have this idea of, you know, my God is better than your God, like my father can beat up your father or something like that. And it's like this old tribal deity that now, and we're going to war over it and so forth, so it can really create a lot more violence if people cling to a tribal idea of God. And that's easy to do. And one of the things I really have realized, and I've been talking about this for a while, is that we human beings have these wonderful capacities that we can use to help us live more creative and beautiful lives. And they are, for example, the power of logic and rationality, an analysis, intellect, you know, that's a great power. I mean, it's a power that we can use sort of mechanically to do things and create things. We have another power, the power of empathy, you know, the power, we all have suffered, right? I mean, there's no one here that has not suffered in some way, physically or psychologically. So we know what that's like. And so when we see that in others, other humans or animals, we naturally have a sense of empathy. I mean, virtually all humans have a sense of empathy where we don't want to cause suffering to others because we wouldn't want to have that done to us. And so we have that capacity. And so we have empathy, we have rationality, and we have intuition, you know, an inner knowing that we can learn to trust and rely on that is on a higher vibrational level also. And the thing is, I think if anyone were to really cultivate any of these three, either rationality and logic or empathy or intuition, they would go vegan. I mean, all three of those will bring you right out of the prison of the ridiculous practice of what we're doing to animals. I mean, it doesn't make any sense rationally. It goes completely against our sense of empathy for animals, for each other, and so forth, and our intuition, our spiritual awareness, is like, no, it's totally counterintuitive to do this. And all three of those powers just collapse under the weight of socialization, of basically what I refer to as tribalism, you know, this idea of my tribe. Now, I'm going to eat the tribe's food no matter what and be accepted by the tribe no matter what. I'm going to comply with whatever the tribe tells me to comply with. And that's what I think is so important for us as vegans, to question tribal mentalities around food and tribal mentalities around everything. Because our tribe is a violent tribe based on killing and commodifying millions of animals every single day. And we shouldn't only question the food, we should question everything about that, right? Everything. I mean, the governmental structures, the medical structures, the educational structures, the religious structures, it's all part of the same system. And that system, if you're born as a cow or a pig, you know it's not a good, doesn't have your welfare. Well, it's the same for us. It doesn't have our welfare either. We're also harmed and really in many ways enslaved by that same mentality of that system. So we really need to understand this at a much deeper level and question everything. And again, most vegans don't take that second step to start questioning at the deeper level. But I think it's fantastic when we can start doing that, because then we can create a movement of liberation of humans and animals and all of us together in the face of this whole psyop and war that's been going on here really for 10,000 years. And now we can really see it. The mask is coming off. We can see very clearly, I think, more and more that the media has been lying the whole time. Governmental agencies have been lying the whole time. And doctors have been lying the whole time, or they've been just doing what they've been told and not looking, not thinking about it, like they've always done with food, too. They just say, keep eating what you're eating, and just come back, we'll give you a quadruple heart bypass. They never really wanted to do anything to threaten their income, for the most part, because that's how they make their money. So it's really vegans, I think, who are taking the second step, the spiritual step of radically questioning all the narratives, that can help us to create a more positive future. So this idea of God is a very interesting one, and I think I'm going to, in a way, be like the Buddha and have kind of a noble silence on it. I don't like to affirm or deny. I think what I really will say, though, is that the people who are atheists, in the sense of not believing in a God, that's fine. I don't have any problem with that. But what I really have a problem with, actually, is materialism. When the idea, that there isn't, this is all there is. What you see, hear, taste, touch, and smell with your five senses, that's it. This universe, this world, like there was a big bang, and it just happened, and everything kind of randomly happened, and we got all this. That, now we're talking about pure evil. From my point of view, this is what, if there is such a thing as a satanic worldview, that's it. Materialism, that reduces everything to matter. It reduces human beings to mere, and animals to mere objects that are conditioned, genetically programmed. If you want to enslave people, you teach that, and that's what's being taught in our schools more than anything. That, they're trying to kill out the idea of God or religion. The powers really are, I think it's pretty obvious, and replace it with materialism, which is, if there's something that's, like I say, satanic, then that is just going to cause tremendous suffering with no end to it. That's it, that mentality. We really need to see, I think, and that only comes, I think, through authentic spiritual insight, that what we are is infinite and eternal consciousness, and this physical world is an arising in our consciousness, like when we're in a dream, right? We know that it seems very real. I mean, I had a dream the other day. I could see, it was, I could feel, a guy put his hand on my neck, it was cold, I could feel the cold, it's totally real when you're in the dream. And then you wake up and you go, oh yeah, it's a dream. So to take the dream to be reality, then you're lost, completely lost. So if we take matter to be real, I don't understand that, no, consciousness is real, awareness. And what is the source of that? To find that out, to quiet our minds so that we get beyond all the dualistic conceptions of ourselves and liberate ourselves from the prison of conditioned thinking, then we begin to understand perhaps a little bit, get a glimpse of the infinite awareness that gives rise to everything that is that the separate self of Will Tuttle or whatever the name happens to be in the form, that comes and goes. That's not, it almost has almost nothing to do with what I am. And that kind of freedom means we don't need to try to manipulate other aspects of ourselves, because we're all, it's just one being happening. But that's not something you can get from books, or, you know, this is something that only comes, I think, through a lot of hard work, in meditation and quieting the mind, which really does take work, I have to say. I mean, some people can just do it, but for the most part, we need to practice becoming a witness to our thoughts rather than just being taken away and following them all the time and all the emotions that go along with it. That keeps us distracted, and it goes by, and 70 years go by, 80 years go by, and then we leave the body. And then what happens? See, that's the other thing. I mean, you have this idea, either, well, the idea now is then it's over, then you're dead. You know, the materialist idea is then you're over. So now they have this whole idea of transhumanism. They're going to try to make eternal bodies, like this, these poor people. I mean, this guy, what's his name? I can't forget his name. Ray Kurzweil. You know, he wants to be immortal and have his brain somehow in a body and go on forever. I mean, it's nothing more pathetic than you can imagine of delusion than this. And yet, these people are very highly respected. They're running the World Economic Forum. They're talking about blending together biological and digital human beings to create superhuman beings. They're not going to be superhuman beings. They're going to be slaves. That's how you enslave people, under those kind of delusions. So we really need to be very clear about this, that if that idea that when we die there's nothing, then you're, that's you teach that to slaves, because that's how you can get them to just be afraid all the time and try to be greedy all the time to get things. It completely destroys the spirit, and we have to really understand that clearly. There's so much, this whole Darwinian evolutionary idea, in many ways, is used as a way to justify human beings dominating other human beings. They say, well, it's survival of the fittest. The strong dominate the weak. That's how it is in nature, so we should just all dominate, try to dominate each other. And whoever has the most money, they're the best people. They should decide how the world is run, because they're the richest ones. So that's what's happening. They are the ones basically deciding, if we allow it. So that's all based on this, what I call scientism, which is not real science. It's a religion, it's a satanic religion masquerading as science, which has pretty much taken over our entire educational, academic, governmental, media world. And it's trying to destroy religion, because actually religion actually is good. I mean, religion actually has within it at least a little bit of authentic spiritual teaching. As always, the golden rule is in every religion. It's there. Don't do to others what you don't want to have done to you. That's not in science. Science doesn't care about that. Science says do whatever you want. You know, it's survival of the fittest. I mean, science is pure demonic. It's pure demonism. That's what it's become. And it's not only that, it's corrupt. So it's completely bought out. Totally. There isn't any. I mean, science, it's nothing but the most corrupt religion ever existed. Used to enslave human beings just like it enslaves animals. So religion is really our only hope, in the sense of, not religion, but spirituality. But religion is the vehicle for ethics and spirituality. So we got to love our religions, revitalize them, bring meaning to them, and create new ones, maybe, that reflect the truth that we are. Because spirituality is ever present. It's the power. It's the word spirit means breath in Latin. What do they want to do? They want us to wear a mask and just stifle our breath, stifle our spirit. So the whole idea is to keep your spirit strong, keep the breath strong. That's why, I love breatharianism. I love the idea. You know, we can live on breath. I'm sure we can. But right now, we still have our training wheels for our little vehicle here. So we can go whole food, organic, vegan, and grow food with love. You know, grow some sprouts, create some ecosystems that support life. And we can all do that. I think that, and we can support people who are doing the best to do that. And the beautiful thing is there's nothing that we really need that we can't get right here. You know, there's a book, I wanted to mention this, there's a book that Madeline and I are reading in the evening together. It's really interesting. You've heard me talk about in the past, maybe, the Anastasia books, which I highly recommend, by Vladimir Magray. It's a series of 10 books. But that's not what I'm talking about. I just recommend it. It's now suppressed literature. It's very expensive. You can only buy it, it's kind of out of print. You can only buy it on eBay usually. Anyway, it's really good. I mean, because Anastasia shows really a way of living in harmony with nature that's based on feminine spirituality. But there's a book we just discovered by chance called Dear Man. It's called Dear Man. And we're reading it every night before we go to bed together. We always do that, some book. And this book, Dear Man, is a true story about a young guy named Jeffrey in France, northern France, who was sitting in this classroom looking out the window thinking, why do I have to sit in here and learn all this stupid stuff? I'd rather be outside in the woods. And so one thing led to another, and he got out of school. And his parents kind of let him out, and when he was 16, he went into the woods. And he started living with the deer. As a deer, gradually becomes a deer. I mean, it's really beautiful to read. He just writes like he gets to know these deer. They're called roe deer, the species of deer in northern France. And so he lives with the deer for 7 years, eating nothing but leaves. I mean, eating what they eat and having no shelter and just not sleeping at night. You know, I mean, sleeping like maybe 1 or 2 hours at a time like they do, and then walking around and just walking with them, just befriending these deer. These deer just grow to really like him, some of them. And he is with them. He's part of the deer culture. And his sense of smell gets so acute. He can smell all of their feelings, and he knows that they can smell his feelings, because every time we have a feeling, it gives out a certain hormone. So they can smell when he's upset or when he's happy. They know, they can smell it. And he starts to learn how to smell all these things. And his skin gets tougher. And he doesn't have to, and he's not cold all the time. And it's still cold, it's still tough, but he just learns how to eat leaves and little tiny roots and berries and shoots. And even in the winter, to survive. I mean, it's really, he has so much love for these, and then the hunters come in and kill his friends, you know, and the rage that he feels, but he can't, what's he going to do? It's really interesting to just see his transformation over time. And it makes me think, you know, we humans have so many capacities, because one of the things that's interesting is he starts to really think like a deer. And in a way, it's beautiful, because he says they're so happy. I mean, they're happy just to be alive, especially when the spring comes, and it's not just the deer, but all the animals, and they have their way of living. There's something, much more to nature and to animals than we realize, but we're always on the outside, and we never allow ourselves to enter into their world, really. And this guy does it. I mean, in a little bit, he just enters their world and develops an appreciation for them, and I think, it's a very, very interesting perspective, because that's one of the things I think that really harms us so much, is that we think, even as vegans, that these animals are kind of pathetic, they're out there, and I sure wouldn't want to be like that. But when we realize that...
Will?
Yeah.
Can I say something? May I say something?
Yeah, sure, go ahead.
This is Lily, and I live with deer. I live way out here in the middle of nowhere, an hour from the nearest town. And one day, a few months ago, when I still felt like singing, I haven't felt that way for a while, but I was singing, and one deer came out of the forest and into the meadow, And then another deer came, and four deer came out of the forest, and I started performing for them, and they all sat down in the meadow and were watching my show. And it was so funny. It was so joyous. It was so beautiful. And of course, these deer know me because I'm out there and they know who I am. And they just decided, well, she's going to perform for us now. And so I started singing the song from go a deer, a female deer. I started singing to them, and they all just, sat down. And it was a beautiful moment. I just wanted to share that with you because it seemed really appropriate.
Wow. Thank you. Thank you so much. Thanks, Lily, for sharing that. Yeah. You know, I think we've seen this also. I know our friend Judy Carman, she'll go and sing to the cows. You know, they're there. And you've seen YouTube videos of musicians will set up and start playing like a string quartet or something by a pasture of cows, and they'll all come running over, and they'll all come sit there, and they'll all listen, you know. I think animals love us, human beings. They would love us if we weren't so dang violent and kill them all the time. They would love to relate to it. That's my vision of a beautiful future. It's not just going vegan, but it's actually beginning to then communicate and live with the other non-human animals in a way that's like you did, Lily, you know, just sharing and singing. But actually, like this guy, the deer man, does, he really tunes in his senses, so he's kind of like telepathic with them. He kind of knows what they're doing through smell and just through knowing, reading their body language, and I think also just getting in touch with their thoughts on some way. I think they're, you know, they're very telepathic. We can be, I think, a lot more telepathic too. So anyway, so that's kind of all connected to that original thing I started talking about. Does anyone else have any thoughts or questions or whatever you want to bring up here? Because we've gone for almost an hour, and I'm afraid I'm going to lose power here pretty soon. So we have a few more. We can go for maybe a few more minutes.
I'll just check in and
yes, Chrissy. Yeah.
Yeah. Good to see you. Still working on pinning down the Will's talk in Nashville, Tennessee on March 23rd, but it's looking good. I talked to her. We're aiming to host it at this great vegan cafe called Sunflower Cafe. And, you know, I've talked to them a couple of times, haven't managed to connect with the person who can finalize the events, but everyone else I talked to say it sounds great, and they, you know, are 99% certain that it's going to be, you know, going to be a go. So I'll keep everybody posted, but I just wanted to, let you well know the latest, and also invite anybody else who feels like coming to town. Will's going to be the main focus of the event and, you know, give his talk, and then I'll introduce him, and I'll also do talk about self-love and veganism, and mention my book, Marrying Myself, which features a vegan protagonist and is about freedom and self-love and all of the issues that we care about. So again, March 23rd, Nashville, Tennessee. It's a Thursday night, so everybody's welcome.
Great. And I'm so glad also, besides your new book, you also have a podcast, right, that you're doing and you're interviewing?
I do, yes, yes. I have a podcast called Vegan Posse. So, Will, I look forward to having you on there.
Right.
I interviewed Tammy Hay, whom some of you know, a couple of days ago. That interview is going to air next week. So if anyone, and Lisa was one of my earliest guests. Back in the early days. So always looking for guests. So if you're interested in coming on, sharing your vegan story, talking about just your journey, this podcast, I do like to talk about projects that people have going on, but it's also a little more personal in nature than some other podcasts, because I like to explore, you know, people's personal journey with veganism and just, you know, just the whole phenomenon of living a vegan life in a not yet vegan world, and just, you know, kind of the dichotomy that creates on a daily basis, and, you know, the joys and challenges of it all. So feel free to email me if you're interested in being a guest. I'll put my email in the chat, and check out the podcast. It's called Vegan Posse, and thanks, Will, for reminded me to mention that too.
Great, great. Good. Okay. Anyone else? We have anything, you know, I just want to mention it quickly that you have a chance to look through the February, resources for 2023. There's a ton of stuff here again, as usual. There's a whole series at the very beginning of new videos that were done by a guy named Tony at Hippocrates. He's a really good camera, and they came out really well. They're all on Vimeo. There's one longer one, which is 20 minutes, and then there's about four shorter ones that are only 3 or 4 minutes long. One is on the new book, Food for Freedom, and one on character development, one on changing attitude, and one on intelligence. And there's another one also with Lillian McDermott. She's really a great force in the vegan movement also. She's in Melbourne. In fact, it's Florida. We're probably going to do a lecture up there too with her organizing that. And then a bunch of, you know, all the news. There's lots of news from the vegan world. And there's also quite a lot of news in the non-vegan world. I've got a lot of that in there, just the what's going on in the movement for human freedom, and some new videos that are out that are really good. I think this new one is going to be excellent. Mickey Willis is doing Pandemic 3, and then there's a new documentary, Never Again, is now global. It's really about the Nazi Holocaust, written by some of the survivors, and in parallels to what's going on right now. With the rollout of the vaccines and all that stuff, it's big. It's like 5 hours. It's 5 1-hour segments. I saw the first one. It was very well done. Anyway, there's a whole lot of stuff there. If you have a chance to look through, it's just so much more than we can probably cover. But anyway, it's good to see that the people are waking up. Even Newsweek had a. Which is kind of amazing. It's time to admit we were wrong about COVID. So they are starting to publish things that are important. There's going to be a lot. I don't know where it's all going to lead, but time will tell. It's important to just stay aware and understand the underlying reality, not only of the system, but also of our true nature. Stay positive and remember you're not just this body. We are the spirit that makes this possible. So anyone else? Let's see. There's thanks, Chrissy, for posting your podcast information. And anything else? Yeah, Dear Man is the name of that. I'll just jot it in. Dear Man. I don't know the author, but it's on Amazon, and it's easy to download if you're interested. It's not that long either, but we're not finished yet, but it's pretty good. Excellent, actually. Anything else? Anyone wants to ask or make a comment? This is your time. We're happy to. We're going to be coming through a lot of different areas. We're looking forward to seeing Kathy Christian also in March, right after Nashville in Arkansas. That's great. And what else? Let's see. Anybody have anything? Madeline's here knitting away. Making beautiful.
This is Lily again. You know, I'm not on Zoom, so you can't see me.
That's okay. Hi, yeah.
You were talking about religion, and we were talking about God and religion, and I always thought that the Jewish religion was pretty, you know, pretty bloody. And one of my friends, I have a lot of friends, vegan friends all over the world, because I am a vegan activist, and she sent me a beautiful, beautiful pamphlet from Jewish Veg called Jewish Values in Action. I'm just going to read you just a couple of just really short paragraphs, and it starts with the Torah. God initially intended that people should be vegan, Genesis 1:29. It was only after the flood, when humans had sunk to such a low point of immorality, that God reluctantly allowed us to eat meat. Meat eating is repeatedly described in the Torah as an act of human gluttony. I thought that was very interesting. And here's another one on compassion. Ta ba'ali hayam. The prohibition on causing animals pain is one of the most beautiful teachings in Judaism. Yet today, both the kosher and secular meat, dairy, and egg industries are intertwined with the horrible cruelties of factory farming. I thought that this is a very beautiful brochure she sent me, and I wasn't even aware that there was such a group, but there is, and they're making their mark, and I thought you'd enjoy that. Health, environment, compassion.
Great. Yeah.
Beautiful photograph of her hugging a calf, and you see her ponytail, and the calf is on her shoulder. And
right.
It just makes you want to cry. It's so beautiful. The calf is smiling. It's precious. It's just so precious. So.
Wow. Yeah, we know the Jewish veg people, some of them. I know some of those people. And it's true. You know, the Jewish tradition has some wonderful teachings of protecting animals. And it's interesting also, you know, there's a new film called Christspiracy. Have you heard of that? Christspiracy? It's made by Kip Anderson. He's one of us. He went through the Wilpish Diet training. He's a Wilpish Diet facilitator. He created, he said he wanted to create a film on the World Peace Diet, and it's three parts. The first one is Cowspiracy. The second part is, which is on the environmental impacts, and then What the Health is on the health impacts. And the third one, we just actually hosted a screening of it in West Palm Beach, and Cam and Kip are the two directors and producers of this film, Christspiracy, and Cam was with us afterwards for a Q&A. But basically, this film is about the ethical, religious, spiritual dimension of veganism, and it's very well done. I have to say, it's a powerful film, just like the other two. He interviewed me for it, and I'm in there a little bit. There's a lot. Basically, what he does, I'll just give you a quick overview. It's not out yet. I mean, it's still being edited. But the basic idea is, he talks about how when he was giving screenings of Cowspiracy, he got a question from somebody who stood up and said, "Is there a spiritual way to kill an animal?" And he just was kind of floored by the question, and he said, "I don't know. I'm not really a spiritual guy, but I don't know." And then the follow-up question was, "How would Jesus kill an animal?" And then he thought, "God, you know, I don't know." So then the guy that asked him that actually was it really happened. It's a true story. It's a guy named Cam who was born and raised in a very strongly Christian family and was a Christian musician, but he was starting to go vegan, and he was traveling around and playing music at all these big Christian churches, and they all wanted him to eat meat, and he didn't want to eat meat, but he wasn't sure. They said you should, and you know, so if you're a Christian, you should be eating meat. So he really wanted to get to the bottom of this, and so he and Kip decided to create a documentary around this question: how would Jesus kill an animal? How do you kill an animal spiritually? And it's very interesting because they go to the Vatican and they ask, you know, how would Jesus have killed an animal? Did he eat meat? And of course they say, it's well known in the scriptures that he had the Passover lamb like they all did, and he ate fish, and then how would he have killed it? Well, I don't know how, if he would have done it himself, probably not. He probably would have had somebody else do it for him, I would imagine. You know, it was so interesting. And then talking to fundamentalist ministers about it, but then bringing in the other religions. You know, is there a compassionate way to kill an animal? And they go through the whole Jewish kosher slaughter in Israel and go to these places. And of course they won't let them film anything. And then they show the terrible suffering at these places. And then they show the halal, the Islamic, and they have, you know, Islamic people saying the same thing, that according to Islamic tradition, you should be kind and loving and compassionate to the animals. Of course, it's in the tradition. And the halal is very expensive to get certified and all that. But again, it's horribly abusive, these poor animals. You know, you're killing them. There's no way to kill an animal. It's not killing, right? But anyway. And so then he goes to Hinduism and goes to the big, you know, that famous Garima festival they have in Nepal where they kill all these animals, and they do this whole thing there. And then they think, well, maybe by hunting, you know, the animal's free, and they go to this Christian hunting camp, and this poor kid is shooting a deer, and he feels so terrible about it. And then they go, to Joel Salatin, who has Polyface Farms, who is this guy. It's free range, local, organic. It's totally humane killing, and he shows how he kills the chickens, and it doesn't look very humane at all. I mean, he sticks them in these tubes and hanging upside down, cuts their throats while they're straggling or struggling and panicking, and all the other animals he just sends to a slaughterhouse. So every place he goes, you can never find, there's nowhere you can find any kind of compassionate killing. It's just impossible. Even though all the religions, and the Buddhists, it's so funny, they talk to these Buddhists about it, and the Buddhist goes, oh no, you should never eat an animal, because the Buddha said that we're all each other's mothers. So if you eat a pig or a cow or a chicken, you're probably eating your mother or your father from another lifetime. What a horrible thing to do. And so then the guy said, so do you ever eat meat? Well, the other day, they wanted me to fix some sausage, and so I ate some of it. He said, you ate some of the sausage? He said, yeah, how could you? That could have been your father. And the Buddhist guy, I think he was like a priest or something, he goes, well, it sure tasted awfully good. I love the movie because it just shows the gross hypocrisy of every religion, right? Christianity, Judaism, Islam, Hinduism, they're all saying, yeah, you should be kind and loving. And if they're all eating it, they're all talking, they're all saying, yeah, you can do it somehow. And so in the final analysis, he realizes that Jesus actually was an animal rights activist, that the scene at the temple really was overthrowing the tables because it was slaughtering animals. It wasn't because it was a den of thieves. It was because it was a den of murderers. And he goes to one of the leading Hebrew scholars of the language that was actually used to be translated as thieves, and the actual word meant closer to violent person or murderer. So it kind of shines a lot of light on maybe what the religions really were, the founders of the religions were really all about. They were about compassion, but then later the religions were all somewhat prostituted by the culture that they're in, which is what I would say in the World Peace Act. That's what always happens. Religion has to serve the culture. And so anyway, when this movie comes out, I think it's a really good one to share with people. And they can't go through Netflix. That's a really interesting thing, because Netflix wanted to edit it, and they don't want to edit it. They want to have it the way it is. And also, Netflix takes all the money. I mean, the poor guy, he has hundreds of millions of views on Netflix and gets like zero money. They don't give you any royalties on Netflix. They just keep all the money for themselves. So they're now partnering up with a vegan, really neat vegan guy. I talked to him. His name is Stefan, who has a lot of experience. He had a million-dollar company doing grassroots marketing. So they're creating a grassroots kind of fundraiser to help everyone who wants to give a little money for this film. You get shares. It's a new kind of a thing, a GoFundMe, where you get get ownership of the film. So the better the film does, the more your shares are worth, and so forth. So this actual kind of a win-win investment kind of model. But anyway, so they're going to be hoping to get this out to millions of people through an alternative to Netflix that they're going to create themselves. It'll be good for all documentary filmmakers in the future. They won't be forced to go through Netflix. They can actually create an alternative, and they're working on that. That's part of the reason for the delay. But anyway, there's a lot of good news and things happening behind the scenes in the vegan movement. It's not all bad. There's a lot of good things happening. And I think, it's important to support these things. Yes, who's that?
Well, hi, this is Tams Nicholson.
Oh, hi. Hi, Tams.
I just wanted to also add, Anne added something so beautiful about Jewish veg, that back to the original question where you first started. So for those of you that don't know, I'm the executive director of AllCreatures.org, which is the oldest faith-based Christian, Judeo-Christian org that's vegan and animal rights in the United States. We were founded in 98 by Frank and Mary Hoffman. But what I wanted to share was, for those of us that are Christian vegan advocates, the question when we're asked by other Christians about why God allows all these terrible things to happen, our understanding is God created a beautiful vegan planet full of love and best described by Homo Ahimsa. And we have corrupted it with using our free will in the worst possible way. So as Frank, our founder, says, you know, Eden was vegan and heaven is vegan. And we as a people are supposed to be going back to what it was originally. So I just wanted to share that because I love hearing about Jewish Edge. They're awesome. We partner with them a lot. And so we're also out there. If you have Christians that you want to, like, direct our way, allpreachers.org, and we've got, you know, like, almost 30 years of stuff up. And we'll be glad to help point them in the direction of Christian veganism.
Thank you so much, Tams. Yeah, that's really important. Yeah, we love Frank and Mary Hoffman and the work that they've been doing and you're doing. Vita Stram, of course, also worked a lot. And allcreatures.org. Everybody, please check out allcreatures.org. Get on their mailing. They do a wonderful weekly mailing with a great newsletter. And we actually love the work you're doing too, and you're right. I mean, that's a beautiful way to look at it. That you can see it all around us. You know, it's a beautiful garden, and it's been corrupted, and it's time for us to clean it up here. So thank you, thanks for that, and thanks Lily for reminding us about the Jewish veg thing too. All right, if there isn't any, I think there was a couple of people that had their hands raised. So I'll go ahead and take. Is everybody happy at this point? Or I know Margie, you had your hand up at one point. If everybody's good, I would like to kind of end maybe a little bit early tonight, if it's possible, just because of the nature of our technical situation here where we are in Key West. That would be probably a good idea for us. So how are we doing? Doing okay, everybody? Great. All right. So I want to thank all of you. Yeah, thanks for putting it up. www.allcreatures.org, all-creatures.org. Yeah, that's it. So let's say our prayer together that we always say, because we're so grateful that we have the opportunity to cultivate the heart of compassion and to live a life as vegans. I love one of the things that Lily always reminds all of us is how grateful she is to be a vegan. And I feel the same way. I'm so grateful for those who have gone before who helped me to see the benefits of giving up animal foods. You don't give up anything. You give up disease and misery and ridiculous stupidity, you know. So it's really, really fantastic. So everybody, we can all unmute our microphones if you'd like, so we can do this a harmonious cacophony of saying our prayer together. It's great to see you all with us. And let's go ahead. Madeline is here too. Here she is.
Yes.
we're two peas in a pod here.
Hello.
Two whirled peas. Whirling it up. Okay, so here we go. Let's go ahead and say it together. Compassion,
all beings, everywhere.
Great. Again. Much love. Go forth and multiply this beautiful message, everyone.
Thank you, Will and Madeline and everyone.
Thank you so much, you. Love you. Love you all.
Bye.
Oh, that was beautiful.
Yeah.